Welcome back to Footsteps in the Attic. You know, my guest today, I'm just personally thrilled to have on the show. When I was young, my mom used to read this particular book to me, and I remember being fascinated by the artwork, and it was called Favorite Tales of Monsters and Trolls. Well, my guest today not only illustrated that book, but he's also illustrated over 100 children's books, 8 of which he also wrote. He was also a cartoonist for The New Yorker. He's worked for The Wall Street Journal and The Washington Post. And a lot of you out there, I know, remember the children's publication Highlights, and his work is all over that as well. Please welcome the multi-talented John O'Brien to the show. John, how's everything in Jersey?
It's great. I'm right now in North Wildwood, New Jersey for the summer, and just enjoying the sun and beach and generating ideas, getting a little work done and everything. I'm enjoying life.
As you should. You've earned it. And I'm curious, like, what inspired you to pursue a career as an illustrator, and who inspired you?
Well, I don't want to say it's the only thing I could do, but it was something I really wanted to do. I wanted to draw for a living, because it was when I was in high school, even in grammar school, I end up instead of taking notes, I'd be drawing and constantly filling up notebooks with drawing instead of doing work that I should be doing. And I started getting better at it, and I decided to pursue it as a career.
That's amazing. And do you have any favorite subject matter that you've grown to love to draw over the years? Is there anything in particular that kind of really floats your boat?
Well, pretty much everything. I like to, when I do cartoons, I like to play off everything I see. You know, I'm very visual. I like doing it. That's why some of the early books I did, I would try to add little things aside from what the storyline was doing, like another little story happening here and another couple little characters doing things. And, I can't say anything in particular, but I loved a certain period, time period of art that when I was studying, I liked the stuff that was coming out of the Flemish artists from like the 15th century, like Hieronymus Bosch and Bruegel and Dürer. And I always liked their drawing, their black and white drawings as much as their paintings. I was always enamored by their etchings and engravings.
Well, that makes sense. I can definitely see those influences in your work. And just, you know, you have a large fan base for your style. And I'm curious, for those out there who don't, you know, the layperson out there, I think everyone's fascinated by the illustrators in the children's book market and beyond. How does that whole process work? Are you hired directly by the publishing company, or do the authors contact you directly?
Mostly the publishing companies, but authors directly does happen. And basically, when I first started out, like right out of, I went to Philadelphia College of Art, which is now part of the University of Arts. It was back in the 70s. And the way things worked in those days, you got a portfolio together and you called directly art directors from magazines and publishing companies and just set up a time and just show up in their office and show them your artwork. And if they liked what you did, they'd take a couple Xeroxes of things that you did and keep them around, and then you might get a call. And that's how it worked. It's a lot different now, but that's pretty much what I did. And eventually I found a rep while I was actually showing some people some work. They put me in contact with a rep, and for a long time I had Evelyn Johnson was my rep in New York, and for the next 30 years, that's how that worked.
Oh, I'd say that worked out then, a 30-year partnership.
Yeah,
And I'm sure you're still close to this day, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, but she's not around anymore.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But, she was, when I was starting, I was in my 20s, and her husband, Bud, also, he was part of the business, too. They were in their late 40s, early 50s when I started working for them. So they had a long career and a lot of artists and all sorts of people doing, the illustrations for children's books. They had some photographers and all. So it was kind of a nice group of people to know also, aside from my working with them.
I'm curious. There's the children's book market, but then there's also the work you did for The New Yorker. And what was your process like for that? How did that differ from children's books? Did they have more strict deadlines? Did you have creative freedom with The New Yorker?
Well, it works totally different. What you do with them, you submit ideas. They call it a batch. You put like 10 pieces together, like cartoon sketches, or I did a few covers through the years, and you just send them in. If they like it, they'll tell you they want to buy it. If they don't, I just keep it in the batch and send maybe another time, or send it out to somebody else if it's a good idea. But I just had it always. I started doing children's books first, but I always had a lot of ideas for cartoons popping up all the time. So I started, actually the first place I really started getting cartoons bought was Omni magazine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Wow. That is amazing. I'm just, your work, you're such a prolific artist. You've had such an incredible career. And as John knows, I have a tattoo of his artwork on my leg because this book, Favorite Tales of Monsters and Trolls, has been embedded in my brain since I was a child. And I remember rediscovering it some years back and being thrilled to find it again. And I'm very curious, John, how did that whole thing come about? How long did it take you? I mean, give me the scoop on Favorite Tales and how that happened.
Well, I brought my portfolio to the art director at Random House at the time, and they were interested in my artwork, and they said, let's do a book, maybe some fairy tales. And there was an editor there that I was working with. His name was Ole Reesum, and he was Scandinavian, and he thought a good idea might be a couple of Scandinavian fairy tales, which the Three Billy Goats Gruff was the main one of the thing. And for me, I jumped on the opportunity. And I did a very tight group of sketches in the beginning, which didn't really mirror the kind of crazy drawings that I was showing him in my portfolio. And he looked at it and he says, "This, isn't quite right." And he sent me back, and I just went to town to putting all the stuff that I wanted to put in the book. I came back, and he was happy with it. Went to the book, and it did fairly well at the time.
Yeah, I would say so, and still does to this day, because I told John my nieces are still addicted to that book and they're always thumbing through it. And I'm curious, what inspired you with the little people throughout the book, which I love because there's so much to look at in your style, and you keep, I think, the reader very busy in a good way. I think people look at the book even today, any of your books, and they kind of rediscover something you put in there, something small. What was that? What was the brainchild of that?
Well, one of the artists I liked, actually a couple of them, was Hieronymus Bosch and Peter Bruegel, and they were these Flemish artists. And Hieronymus Bosch had all these little stories going on in his paintings, like Garden of Earthly Delight, and a few other paintings. And I just loved all these things happening, and on this overview of well, it was just a lot of things. I said, well, I'd like to do that with a children's book, just be able to throw these other things happening while the main story is happening. And then also the characters aren't exactly what, like my trolls are just a little bit different than somebody else's. And
Yeah.
I just enjoy doing that.
I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, anybody that looks at the book remembers it. I mean, and what I love is your style when I see a book that you've done, that's unmistakably yours. And I mean, some of the books you've done is The Night Before Christmas coloring book. You look at the cover, you know immediately that's John. You know, Revolutionary Rogues, Cool Boppers Choppers, The 12 Days of Christmas, which I have, How Sweet It Is and Was, The History of Candy, which I have. I mean, out of all these things you've done, and these are just a couple, because you've done so many, what's been your favorite? What do you have one?
I don't really have a favorite. And I won't tell you the I have like a bad art bin at home. Things that aren't my favorite that I said, how did I do that? Why did I do it that way? I should have done it differently and all. But most of them. But actually, I'm very proud and Favorite Tales of Monsters and Trolls. Maybe that should be my favorite because it was the first one I did and it that reflected exactly the way I wanted to do it.
Yeah, you had that creative freedom to just go.
But I always like to inject humor and everything anywhere possible. I just like to come up with. That's why I sort of turned into doing cartoons also. Just to, I just always like to, if I could find a way to add humor to the story, whatever I could do to it or twist it and just a little bit or even twist a tale of like 12 Days of Christmas. I've had it
Oh, it's
instead of.
hilarious. It's
Instead of
great.
just a straightforward story, I just sort of had this person being sort of, I don't want to say harassed, but each one of the gifts is sort of a bane to them. It just would happen
It comes across in the illustrations, which I love. Like that emotion you just said is totally in the book. You can look at it and know, oh, this guy's overwhelmed. And I love that because I got exactly what you were going for.
Well, that's, I mean, I'm glad that you saw that in there too,
Totally. I mean, and that shows what kind of talent you have that you can convey that in your illustrations, which is a credit to you. Just so I don't forget to ask you this, by the way, do you still have your original like artwork from Monsters and Trolls, or do you keep like your originals somewhere?
Of that book, I have every piece.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Most of them I might have given a few pieces away or sold pieces to a lot of these other books and all, but that one I've kept together
I love
for a
that.
long time and always planning on doing something else with it, but we'll see.
I hope there's a part two because you could definitely write and illustrate it. So I'm just going to throw my two cents. I hope there is a sequel of some sort to that book.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. That's a little impetus.
Thumbs up from me, and I will be your first purchase. I'm letting you know.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm curious, you talked a little bit about your process. Do you have a creative space? Is there certain music you play? Like, how does that work?
Well, I have certain music I play. In recent years, I like traditional Celtic music,
Oh, that's
like
awesome.
dance music, like jigs and reels and things like that. I like that having in the background. But I also sometimes I just might even have the television on, just in the background, not even watching or just another. It could be news shows. It could be anything, like the History
Yeah.
Channel. So,
There has to
but.
be some kind of something in the background, like total silence does not work for you.
It doesn't. I like having just some noise because I'm there working alone.
Yeah, I get it. I completely get it. When I used to write like comedy sketches, I had to have just something on so I know where you're coming from.
Well, you get ideas from that too.
Yeah.
Sometimes something's on a TV commercial, all of a sudden, next thing you get an idea for a cartoon.
Exactly. I'm with your, in-demand career, you've been so active and so proactive. Are you picky now about what projects you accept because you're still in the game? Like what gets your attention to go, "Ooh, I think I want to do this."
I'll be offered to do a, somebody has a manuscript that usually the editor or the editor might say, well, this might be up John O'Brien's alley. and that and they'll send to me, ask me if I want to do it. And if I think I can do some well with it, I'll do it. If this was 40 years ago, I would take it no matter what.
No, I get it.
It needed to work, but you know, now if it's something that I could do justice to, I can have, and I want to have fun with it. I say I could come up with some good ideas with this, and I'll do it. In fact, just recently, I had a friend who works as a wine sommelier wrote a book about. We work. It's called Tales from the Wine Floor. It's like people ask him silly questions, and he gives them like silly answers back. But he wanted me to do some cartoons for it, so I did that, and that was just out of the blue. That's when you said an author contacting you, and I said, yeah, if you get a publisher and they want to, you know, hire an illustrator, a cartoonist, I certainly would be on board. And turned out it worked out.
Wow, that's amazing. Look how, I mean, that just full circle. It was meant to be.
Yeah.
I'm curious, John, with your artistic talent, who did you get that from, and has that been passed on to your daughter?
My daughter's very creative. She doesn't work in the field or anything, but she's mm-hmm. She's very good. She has an artist's mind.
Yeah.
She thinks so. She's very good. Actually, my mother liked to paint, and she was an artist. I think I got a start from that.
Yeah. What did she like to paint?
Well, like maybe still lifes or.
Okay, right.
Or, but, I mean, not a lot. I mean, she dabbled with it, but enough to, you know, I'd try it out myself and do things. You know, when I was younger, I liked to paint clipper ships. You know, it was sort of an odd thing, but I just love sailboats.
Oh, my God. John, it's so weird you're saying that, not to interrupt you, but I'm sitting in a boat room right now because I'm actually at my parents' house recording this because they have a quiet den down here, and my father is obsessed with nautical. So literally as you're saying that, I'm looking around and seeing nothing but boats. So when I play this interview for him, he will freak out because the minute he hears ship, his ears go up.
That's, yeah, I just was enamored by, you know, the ships and riggings and which sail was what, and you know, just it was fun. I mean, I didn't understand how I got interested in it, but I just was.
Well, I'd say it worked out pretty well for you. I'm curious, what is your least favorite subject matter to draw? Like, is there something that you've been requested where you're like, eh?
Well, and I still have to do it, but there's always something but portraits.
Okay, right.
I'm just never happy with my drawings of portraits. No matter what I do, I'm just not happy. In fact, I just finished a book that's coming out in the fall. It's called How Ben Franklin Became a Revolutionary, and I just don't. I every time I look at the Ben Franklins that I drew, I've just said I could have done something better than that. It's just not exactly what I want, but they're happy with it, and the overall, you know, book came out nice.
Well, I think you're probably your own worst critic. So everybody else would look at it and go, "That's phenomenal," but you, being the artist, you notice that one little thing in your mind that seems off, even though probably everybody else sees it and goes, "This is amazing."
No, I've done it for a long time. I did a bunch of books in that series of who was Ben Franklin and who was Thomas Jefferson and all. And so there I had to, you know, do portraits of, you know, likenesses of all these people. And to this day, I'm still unhappy with a lot of my drawings.
Well, I'm a Revolutionary War nut. You might not know that about me. So I will absolutely be picking all these up, including Revolutionary Rogues. So I'm very excited for that.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. I'm curious, you mentioned it earlier, how the industry has changed. What was illustrating like before the computer age and sending files of your work compared to, you know what I mean? Like what are the differences of then and today?
Well, you just directly, you got on the phone, called the art director or an editor, and they would give you time, come in, show your portfolio, sit at a table and turn the pages, and they would make copies of things, and you talk to them directly. So you could sort of be sitting there selling yourself too. You know, you could say, oh, I could do this, or this is what I like, or pull something else out if you think that that's what they might be interested in. Whereas now, there's a lot of non-face-to-face back and forth that you don't get to meet these folks that you're working for. And it's just, that's a little different that way. But, you know, it was old technology, even the printing process. And so it was a lot more maybe three-color books as opposed to a full color book, which is very easy to do now. There was it was different, but I enjoyed that part of it where you could actually go and meet the folks you were working for and try to sell them an idea.
It was more personal.
Yeah.
You know what, you actually brought up a great point, because I've always been curious about this. So you know, when you were first starting, how does the actual printing work? Because nowadays people can just send files. They can take the computer files and print directly. Like, what was that like before that?
Well, you sent them, they always, well, now you can actually send, you can send a PDF to them with
right.
good resolution. Then they wanted the pieces and they would send them out to wherever they were having it printed, sometime to China. Or you know, whatever they would have it. They would send you proof sometime. You could look at you know, how the book might look. But it was mostly they made the decisions at that point. But they always wanted the artwork. They didn't want you to send it any other way.
Right. Wow. It's amazing now when I think of that. You know, but I mean, I guess the advantage is now you can keep some of your, you know, proofs. You don't have to worry about, will I get these back?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Now, with children's books, I still send with the whole book. I still send the whole book in. But
wow.
Like with cartoons and a lot of like a single full color piece for somebody, possibly it will be they'll print from what I send them.
Yeah,
and that was like unheard of like 20 years ago.
I'm curious, John, what is it easier or do you prefer to do the color or black and white? I mean, I'm sure it's easier to not do color, but do you enjoy color more?
I like the feel of a black and white.
Okay, right.
Sometimes I feel like in a way you're coloring too, you know, by intensity of darks and lights and things. But then you know, I enjoy color. I have a certain way of working. I use watercolors over my drawings after I draw them in black and white. So they, what will happen is, as I watercolor, I have sort of these dots that I use to sort of enhance colors and play around. So I sort of have a way of working that, and I'm kind of happy with the way it works. And I like doing, I should say I like doing both, but black and white is what I originally started off liking, and that's what got me started.
No, I get it. One thing I need to order is your the coloring book you did, because I have 12 Days of Christmas, but I know you did 12 Days of Christmas as a coloring book, and I know the cover is you. That's your color scheme, but the rest of it's in black and white. So that will be very cool to see, you know, your interpretation of the 12 Days of Christmas in black and white. But I'm not going to let anybody color in that one.
Well, no. I have actually had people color a couple of these coloring books in that I did and send me what they did. Or I found them online, whether it be a coloring club. There was the book you're talking about is The Night Before Christmas.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The Night Before Christmas, not The 12 Days of Christmas. Apologize.
But I had a... I guess it was a coloring club. This is probably maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I got an email from the coloring club, and there was a certain character or a creature in one of the creatures that wasn't stirring or but it was in there, and they wanted to know what it was. Enough to contact me on that. It was kind of funny. It was a dog. And I had to rethink, well, maybe I didn't draw it right. But
well, I think your work just sticks with people so much that didn't you have somebody, I think I read this correctly, somebody even contacted you and said they were worried about the little people in Monsters and Trolls as the troll was falling off the bridge because the little guy lived in his hat.
Yeah, they get personal with it. But it's kind of good to hear that somebody's really looking at all the detail and wants to know what's happening there. But yeah, that is funny. That was somebody did react that way.
Nowadays,
I never knew what happened to him after he fell off.
Do you have you considered dabbling into this 3D printing world? Because I would imagine your images as a 3D print would be pretty badass, John.
I really haven't gone there. But
yeah,
I'd be wide open for it. I mean, it would be fun. But I really haven't pursued that.
All right, well, some.
I should. Yeah, now you got me thinking about that.
100%. Please do, because again, I'll be your first customer. I want your artwork in 3D in my residence. So yeah, give that a thought, John, because I think it would sell big time.
Well, I'm going to do that then.
All right, that's you heard it on the record, everybody out there. All right. Now, of course, your resume is so large that I had mentioned to you before we went on the air that you have written some of these books yourself. What are some of the examples of books that you've written yourself?
Well, there's one called Sam and Spot. It's all alliteration. You know, it's about a guy and a dog. He loses his dog and he calls Spot. And all these spots come with all not the right one, or the right one is among them, and they all show up, and he has to eliminate one at a time till he finds his original spot.
Oh, I love that.
Another one's called Poof. It's about a couple who kind of lazy. They're two wizards, and they're lazy, and they don't want to change the baby. They start changing him into things. And then they would change into another thing that she would have to take care of, and then she would change into something he would have to take care of. And at the end, I can't tell you the ending. But
yeah, no, we don't want to know the ending. People have to get it. They have to find it.
But things like that, as we were talking about the 12 Days of Christmas, I didn't write the story, but I would do something other than what's expected of the story. Yeah, burn something into that. Or Mother, I did a version of Mother Hubbard's Christmas, and it starts out with the original nursery rhyme, and then it just turns into a lot of other things.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, you can't go wrong with that premise. That is so original, too. I love that. A Mother Hubbard's Christmas. You must be a Christmas nut like I am, so that's good. I love that.
Well, and that's the time people like to people like Christmas books, you know. So it's a good and for the season. It was nice to have something out there.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I'm working on a children's Christmas book myself. So I'm very glad you said that, John. That gives me some encouragement.
What's it going to be called?
Well, that's the part. I had a title, and then I realized it was already out there. So the title I have to now rethink because I'm somebody, I don't want a replication of a title that's already been out there. It has to be original. So I have to now rethink the title that I had, which the original was The Night Before Christmas. But I've realized that there are now two children's books with that title out there. So I cannot use that. I have to do something original.
12 Nights Before Christmas.
Well, there you go. See, John, you're already coming up with better stuff than me. I'm curious, what is your dream illustration project? Like, what for you is something, you know what, I want to tackle that, or that you've had in the back of your mind? If you do.
of everything based on music. I'm a musician also, so I always wanted to maybe a book with. I've done a couple of books that involved with music, but something would have everything from music limericks to palindromes, and I mean just a whole book of humor. It would maybe it could be semi children's book, semi adult. A lot of drawings, and that's something I've been thinking about, trying to put some things together.
I think that's a great idea. It brings people.
As far as you know, sometimes I somebody else finds it for me. You know, so my dream book was they come up with an idea that they said this would be perfect for you. Here's a manuscript that we have, and sometimes it works out better that way.
No, I love that, though. I think definitely there's a connection with you and music. Like, as you said, I was going to bring that up anyway. You're a musician. Was that something you've just always taken to? Were you born with that? Or was it something you got into, taught yourself, and here you are still playing?
In eighth grade, I took guitar lessons, and I would start out playing rock and roll and blues and, you know, garage bands and things that you did back in the late 60s, early 70s, and eventually I started playing Dixieland bands and ragtime music. I used to play on a boat, like banjo sing-along at one time, and down here in Wildwood, and another place, the Red Garter, I used to play in there. There was a place where everybody would come in and just sing along with the band, and it was a lot of fun. Then in recent years, I've been playing a lot of Celtic music because I just always liked it. I'm playing the banjo and the concertina also. They're my two main instruments right now.
I love that. I couldn't tell you liked Celtic music, John, with O'Brien as your last name. So,
I'm half Italian.
Oh, then look at that. Oh, you got it all then. There you go. I definitely have Italian blood. I mean, I definitely have Irish blood, I should say. Unfortunately, I wasn't blessed to have Italian blood, but I love Italian food.
I do too. I grew up on it, my mother.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. My sister-in-law, their family is big Italian. So we've gone over there and had the seven fishes and the whole deal, and love that. Love, because Italians love to feed you, which I absolutely, you know, you're not going to go wrong with me if you're offering me food. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with that. At Thanksgiving, it couldn't be just the turkey. It had to be lasagna along with it and other Italian accoutrements. And it was just the Italian part always came in with the food.
I'm curious, since we were mentioning other cultures, do you have a favorite place that you like to travel abroad that inspires you? Any particular place jumps out?
I really haven't done a lot of travel abroad. I did. I remember going to France. I went to see all the a lot of the French impressionists.
Right.
Hear about these cities that they, particularly on the coast, that they would they were paint from, and I just wanted to go see these places and what they look like, and Normandy, and then go to the Louvre and all the other museums in Paris and all. So I enjoyed that abroad. I mean, I could say I like going to the Caribbean, and but mostly stay in the United States.
No, I'm the same way. I haven't been abroad too much, so I get it. Plus, traveling's kind of a pain in the butt. So there we go.
Yeah, particularly nowadays, it seems like to be. I hear these horror stories every day on the news.
Uh huh.
People locked in airports for 3 days, and yeah. Not ready to do that.
Yeah, not my idea of an ideal vacation there. I'm curious, what are some of your favorite films which have inspired you? Because you're an artist, so you definitely appreciate other forms. So I'm curious, what are some of your favorites that you've watched that may have inspired your artwork?
I'm not sure if it inspired my artwork as much, but I love any historical movie. There was a movie, it's not a well-known movie. In fact, Harvey Keitel was called The Duelist.
Oh
It
yeah,
was
I've heard of that. Absolutely.
took place in Napoleonic France, and I always loved that era, and I love the paintings from that era too. But it was about these two Napoleon generals fighting it out, having duels constantly. One was I don't know. They were just throughout the movie, even during the retreat from Russia, they were still fighting, and that in the very end had a nice ending. And movies like that, I love stuff like Braveheart,
Oh yeah.
all those movies.
Well, you have good taste. I'm
Rob
into the.
Roy.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. You're hitting that. You're checking the boxes there, John. You have a very good taste in film.
Well, I'm glad you like that stuff too.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm a big history buff too, so I like to go to Gettysburg. I believe it or not, I haven't been to Colonial Williamsburg yet. I need to go there because I'm a big Revolutionary War guy, so I have to put that on the list.
Well, you live near Philly too. That's
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in town there. The actual buildings that a lot of these things happened at.
Valley Forge, not too far away, so I always get that the tingles when I'm driving through Valley Forge.
Yeah, great. And Williamsburg, I was there, and it is what they say it is. Really nice. And, it's worth a trip.
Well, then it's on the list. Literally written it down. So, do you, what is something that you illustrate just for yourself when you're not commissioned to do anything and you just are doing it for the sheer joy of it? What are some examples of some things you've just worked on that is just for you?
Well, I'm always playing around with sketches for sketch ideas for things, and very rarely do I actually do a finished drawing, like a finished one, just without it being commissioned. I just time wise, I have tons of ideas. I have sketchbooks with ideas that I had 4 years ago and 3 years ago. It changes a little. The next year it changes, and then finally, something comes out of a spark of an idea that it's finally turned into like a cartoon idea that I could submit, and it finally works. I'm very visual. I when it comes to with cartoons, I like doing sight gags a lot more than I do with caption cartoons. I just have more. I think that way, and I guess that kind of, as being an illustrator, I think it's visually and something happening just before your eyes without having to have a caption with it.
Do you ever walk around and something that you see as you're traveling, even if it's somebody like falling or something just goofy that happens, does that inspire you to go, oh wait, I could draw this moment in a different form?
Always. I don't go anywhere since day one without a small tablet and pen. I
Wow.
just jot everything down. 90% of what I jot down doesn't work. It might be funny at the time when it's finally on paper, it doesn't. But then on paper, it morphs into something. Sometimes when you see it visually, you get other ideas from it, and that's how it works.
I love that. I remember hearing that when I was in New York and doing some comedy, and I took some writing courses. This guy that I had worked with worked for Mel Brooks, and he said Mel Brooks will be writing ideas down constantly. He said 100 of them will suck, but that 101 idea, that one idea will be brilliant. And he goes, and that's how he strings together his movies. He strings together that brilliant one out of the garbage that he wrote. So I think it's interesting that you said, ah, some of these that I come up with, it doesn't work. But then when you get that one that clicks, it's magic.
It always seems to work when you see it on paper. Sometimes it's in your mind, or even you jot down the inkling of whatever the idea was. When you finally see it down on paper and come back to it, and like 3 days later you come back and it still works, you say, "Oh, I think I have something here."
Yeah. And
But
I
I
mean,
have millions of things in the works that aren't ready yet, or it's just something that's a subject that I feel like I could do something with, or an item, or whatever, a cliche. And sometimes it just all of a sudden it just comes to you. It just works.
Well, I personally, I hope you never stop because, your artwork is truly a gift. I'm glad that you're using your gift because some people out there don't. And I think you have been, I think you've impacted a lot of people's lives in a very joyous way. And I want to thank you on behalf of all those people who have looked at your work and it sparks those fond memories. And I can tell you one in particular. I remember my mom in this house that I'm sitting in upstairs, and she's putting me to bed, and we're upstairs, and she's reading Monsters and Trolls, doing all the voices, and I'm just fascinated by the artwork, and I'm looking at it, and that was magic to me because I never wanted her to stop reading because I wanted to keep looking at all those illustrations, and that has stuck with me till to this day. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that, and that it really means a lot when you hear about somebody's reaction to your and enjoyed something that you did out there,
Oh.
and the illustrations being an important part of what they're reading, not necessarily just the text.
I honestly think it's the illustrations, honestly, and that's no disrespect to the writing, but it's the illustrations that with you provides that magic. And I know I'm not alone in saying that because you've had a lot of people contact you over the years, and it's just thank you for using your gift and thank you for sharing it.
Well, I'm glad to do it.
Do you mentioned you have some stuff in the irons, some irons in the fire, but do you have anything upcoming that people will get to, see sooner than later, or are you kind of keeping it close to the vest?
I have less cartoons printed than I had in the past, running the New Yorker, but they still pick up cartoons of mine, and so there's some just going to pop out, and I hope that when they see them in print, they like them because there's some of my better ideas. There's two books I spoke of that are coming out in the fall, the one about wine and the one about Ben Franklin. They'll be out, and there's my addition to those are all it's all humor, so it's proud of the stuff I have in those two books coming out, and I'm submitting things constantly, and there'll be more cartoons and books and things in the future.
I am beyond excited to hear that. You will always have a fan in me, and I know you have a lot of fans out there. So I want to ask, where can people find you? Where's your website? I know what it is, but I want you to tell everybody where it is because I want them to look you up and look at your work for those that have not had the pleasure of seeing it yet.
Well, it's called John O'Brien Illustrator. That's my website. But also, if you Google my name under like New Yorker cartoons or children's books, and just go to images, so many images show up just because the publishers put them all out there. Some of them are for sale as cartoon prints and things like that, but and a lot are just things like articles or go along with different just the different books that I've done through the years. Everything's out there, but that's the easiest way to see what I do.
Well, I've never shared this particular story with you, but to show the power of John's work, I remember one day I just remembered this book, and it was Monsters and Trolls, and I couldn't find it in this house. I remember coming back from New York. I was up in the attic. I was going through everything, and I go, "Oh my God, where's that book? I need to find this book." So I spent so long just putting, like, typing random stuff in Google Images, like monsters, because I didn't know the title. I didn't remember it. I just remembered the work. I remembered all the artwork, but I couldn't think of the freaking title. So I'm typing in trolls. And for some reason, one day I hit the right image and there it was. And I was almost jumping up and down. I said, "That's it. That's the book." So I click on that link. It brought me to Favorite Tales of Monsters and Trolls, which ultimately brought me to you. So I am very grateful, again, for your work and the impact you've had because it really is magic. And I want to thank you again on behalf of all the readers out there for this amazing artwork. And for those of you who hadn't seen it, trust me, look John up. It is worth your while. John, thank you so much for doing this today. Will you please come back sometime and update everybody on all your projects?
Yes, Brian. Happy to visit. Love you, Doug.
Thank you. Well, it's just been a pure honor to have you. It really has. It's been a joy, and I'm already looking forward to you coming back. So we will absolutely do that. I'm going to ask you to hold on so I can thank you in person, thank you off air. But for Footsteps in the Attic, this is Brian Hobson for John O'Brien. We'll see you next week.